There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 907, October 11th. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say, in gut we believe, according to Sir Hamilton, while Wingman is Toto's Turkish delight. Back to the Ataturk of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, LCH completely pissed off at Merck, Mercedes turning up the power, Andretti and Herta are coming to Formula One, and you better keep your belt on because it's going to be exciting. And just a reminder to all our wonderful dedicated listeners that we need your contributions, tiny, medium, and large, to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you want to. Nasser, welcome to the studio. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, they say slippery when wet, and I was looking at the weather forecast on Friday and Saturday, and it was looking that Collie will be in the wet, but it will be Turkish sunshine by the time race rolls in. But I was very surprised when I was watching the pre-race show, which is 1 hour about it, that there was rain and umbrellas and all that kind of stuff. So I thought, okay, this means Max winning the race, and Lewis on the podium, and how wrong we all can be in our assessment. I did enjoy the race. It was not as thrilling and exciting as the Belgian Grand Prix, but how did you like it, sir?
Well, I thought that Gasly should have been banned from Formula One after spinning at Machismo, but other than that, I thought the start from Bottas was phenomenal, finesse, delightful, light on the fingertips, if you know what I mean. You know what I'm talking about? The Jim Clark touch in the wet, dominating all across the nation, laughing at his Mercedes teammate. And I'm telling you, if Bottas had a start like that, well, what happened to Lewis? I mean, he was only in 11th. Let's put it this way. In the previous race, our Max started last and finished second. In this race, things were a little different. They were a little wet, and this track is hilarious. This track mocks everybody. You want wetness? We keep wetness. There's no dry line. Dry lines do not exist in Turkey. This was a phenomenal race. I loved every minute of it. I thought Bottas truly in charge, and did it in a very comfortable living room kind of fashion. I thought it was a wonderful testament to his simple ability to be machismo when needed. And Max, all he had to do was just ride his coattails until the end. It was fascinating. This is truly a wonderful world that we live in. And I love the fact that Lewis was getting a little disgruntled on the radio. And he was becoming a little radioactive, and the Geiger counter was going click, click, click. So it was fascinating. And now, I love all this stuff, and we have rumors of Herta in Formula One. Could you imagine this long-haired beatnik in Formula One? This is what we need. Nas, I'm more excited than ever. I am ready to take on and drink the Kool-Aid.
Okay, Mr. Jones, very nice and very impressive. But you know what Bottas put in was a magnificent drive, no question about it. And to be honest, I really thought Max is going to take care of this guy by the end of the opening lap, if not in the first corner. So tremendous drive from him. But, you know, like DC said, that on his day, he could beat Michael Schumacher and Raikkonen and Hakkinen and anyone. But those days were far and few between, and that's where the DC problem was. And I think Bottas has the same thing. I mean, every now and then he can out-qualify, out-race, and totally dominate his teammate, your favorite, Lewis Carl Hamilton. But it doesn't happen too often, and he cannot blame it on bad luck. His bad luck is who the teammate is. But still, a tremendous drive. I'm very happy for him. He was very happy. You know, the only disappointment about his performance was on the cool-down lap. He did not give his customary, to whom it may concern. Did you miss that?
Indeed, indeed. For whom the bell tolls is always a good line for any sporting event. So, yes, Bottas, the philosopher. No, hilarious weekend, I have to admit.
Yes, and you know, sir, six races to go. Excitement is building. And next race, moi will be there. This will be my first Formula One race since the season finale of 2019. So I'm glad, I'm very happy. And one of my nephews is going with me, and that's his first Formula One race. So I'm very happy about that. And we will talk about the Michael Andretti, Alfa Romeo, Sauber situation, and Colton Herta a little bit later. Shall we take a quick look at the Colli situation, sir?
Yes, sir. Fascinating, fascinating. Fernando was so happy.
Oh, yes. Bottas 4.0 gets hand-me-down pole position from LCH, who had a 10-place grid penalty for engine chain. Reason he did not go back to back of the grid was he only changed ICE, internal combustion engine, and not all the excess baggage and kit and caboodle that comes with today's environmentally friendly and PC power plants. Max on front is always a threat for the lead through push and shove, or pole sitter being bogged down at the start, whichever comes first. Obviously did not happen this time. Row 2, Ferrari driver Charles Leclerc, and always impressive in Red Bull B-team, Monsieur Pierre Gasly. He is really doing very well against his potty mouth Pokemon monster, Yuki Tsun. Row 3 was total Habla Español, El Machismo, and El Checo. Mr. Rogers, 5 different teams in the top 5 to start a Grand Prix is a good thing for Formula 1. And this was first top 5 start for Machismo since Suzuka 2014. And as we all know, Suzuka was the scene of the scream that is still heard around the world and always will be as long as he's racing. Do you concur, sir?
Indeed.
Now, row 4 was the L show. 2 young Turks who have won pole positions but still looking for win number 1 in Formula 1. That would be Lando Norris and Lance Stroll. Row 5, the immensely talented Mr. Tsunoda and Mark Webber's BFF from his Turkish Grand Prix days, Dr. Marco's original love child, Sebastian Vettel. I still remember the radio message to Seb from Christian Horner after the season finale in 2013. Sebastian Vettel, you are 4-time world champion. But so sad, Seb never got to play Dave Brubeck Classic, Take 5. What say you, sir?
Oh, but that kind of luck, Nasser, it's not divvied up to just anybody. You have to be special. You have to dress special. You have to talk special. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of world champions out there lacking that certain pedigree to where Lady Luck shines and says, you are my boy. And yes, indeed, sticking around with Mercedes, the loyalty paid off. And yes, we have. Actually, I know it's, nobody believes me, but Max Verstappen is not going to win this world championship. Red Bull is running out of steam and energy, and Toto, as he was giggling, pulled out the briefcase with the knob, or the knob case, and turned up the volume. And even Christian Horner said, "Holy Toledo, all of a sudden the Mercedes looks like it's on fire." And yes, he turned up the pace. It's now time to push everything to the limit. And I hate to say it, but we're going to see some Toto domination all across the nation.
Well, speaking of dress, did you see the dress LCH was wearing upon arrival at the Istanbul track? Now, everybody has an opinion, so do I, and all I can say is to each his own. But my two Turkish leaders say it was the finest from the RuPaul collection.
Well, RuPaul was definitely involved. Yeah, I'm excited. I thought it was exciting, except for one thing. It looked terrible. He looked like an old woman from France that just forgot to stay home and eat more cheese.
You know, many years ago, I was in Istanbul, and I went to a Turkish folk dance from different parts of Turkey. And these ladies were dressed in very beautiful dresses, folk dances. You know what a dervish is in Turkish tradition?
I do.
Okay, so there was a dervish dance also, which I enjoyed very much. But the highlight of the evening was these beautiful ladies in these beautiful dresses. And Lewis's dress reminded me of that evening. But like I said, you know, to each his own. But in his defense, as far as the luck is concerned, Mr. Rogers, luck is, let me tell you what luck is. Luck is Kimi Raikkonen bolting away at the start in Imola 2005 and Barcelona 2005, saying sayonara to everybody, and then having mechanical issues. And we all know who won that championship. And let me tell you what luck is. Spinning on the opening lap in the season finale, turning your car around after being hit by Bruno Senna, damage to the car, and you can still finish the race. And that's luck. But I'm going to tell you something. I was thinking about this yesterday, about this luck. You know, we have a DNF chapel at the F1 Weekly Palatial Studios. If somebody or anybody or people are convinced that a guy has won 9 more races than Michael Schumacher, who everybody thought was the god of Grand Prix racing, if not everybody, a lot of people, if that guy who has won nine more races than Michael, and people still think it's all luck, then you know what we need at F1 Weekly? I'm going to tell you, we need a wake-up chapel. And I'm going to, in the visitor book, I'm going to put for and on behalf of host of F1 Weekly. You'll be number one member.
That's a very good idea. And, of course, we only serve one kind of condiment at this chapel, and that would be coffee.
Yeah, that's fine.
We love coffee.
I love coffee with cream and Splenda or Nutriseed or whatever. But I want McDonald's coffee or Denny's has good coffee too. Dunkin' Donuts has good, not just any coffee. It has to be quality.
Well, we'll get sponsored. You know what I'm talking about, Nasser?
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about, Mr. Rogers. Because I'm going to tell you, with the way Bottas was going, I'm thinking, you know, whoa, are we going back to Mercedes' domination of 2 years, and if whether they were sandbagging or just waiting for the right moment, if they have discovered that magic again, then it's sayonara to Max's championship. It's not over. Because, you know, if Lewis wins in USA, Austin, Texas, he gets the lead back, right? But man, if Max wins the race, then he's going to be ahead of 13 points. And then it's going to get very, very, very intense between these two. And with less and less races remaining, the probability of, you know, let's get physical is going to get very high. But we shall see. What we don't want is like a torpedo from a totally uninterested party. Because, you know, if Sergio Perez takes out Lewis, there'll be a lot of chatter on the web. If Bottas takes out Max or both the Red Bulls, as has happened, there'll be a lot of chatter, but we don't want like Lance Stroll harpooning Lewis or... But you know what? What will be really interesting if Alonso takes out Hamilton in the last race. Oh, can you imagine that, the intensity there?
Very easily, and Fernando should do that. I think it's a probability. These things happen. I would love to see that. But no, Hamilton's going to win the championship. I hate to tell everybody, but the knob has been turned up. Christian Horner saw it. All of a sudden, their straight line speed is phenomenal. And when we get to Austin, we're going to see Lewis Hamilton back in the saddle again. And it's going to be interesting. And Bottas is going to be pumped up. He'll follow team orders. He'll let Hamilton win. And things are going to be interesting. Because I think Red Bull is going to take a chance on turning it up. Because Honda wants to turn it up. Everybody wants to turn it up. But one DNF from Red Bull. And you know what that means.
Well, one DNF for either Red Bull or Mercedes. We're talking, of course, you know, Max and Lewis. If there's a DNF and the other guy wins, which is most likely what's going to happen, then it's over. Then what will happen, you know, it will put, and I remember Senna was once in this situation, then you will have to win the remaining three races, and with that comes that the other guy does not finish in the top three in at least two of the races or some combination like that, and then it makes very, very difficult, and then the tension goes sky high. Well, it wouldn't be nice to see a little push and shove between Christian Horner and Toto Wolff? Or what would be even better, since both are from Austria? Dr. Marco getting in the face of Toto Wolff in German.
No, but you know what? Max has said a few things that I thought were very interesting. And Max is there, and he sees the Mercedes, and he smells the Mercedes. I think Max knows things that he doesn't say because he's a good publicist in terms of keeping everybody straight. But Max isn't dumb. I think he knew that they lucked out in Istanbul. He clearly saw the extra pace that Mercedes had, which they have unleashed for the final six races. And Max knows. And that's why he said his life is not going to change if he loses the championship. He's already putting out those feeler gauges just to cover everything. I hate to tell you this, but even Max knows that Mercedes is still the dominant one in the field, and Red Bull has simply done catch-up. And when you're catching up, really easy to have what they call a done blown up.
Yeah, he already had one in Azerbaijan, right? It was not the engine, but the tire. But, you know, it's all part and parcel of the game. But, you know, let's just take a quick look at the race recap. And we shall start with your man, Machismo, playing first lap tango with Gasly. And you think Gasly should get the guillotine?
No, we're very civilized, and we have not used the guillotine until, surprisingly, the last one was in 1937. He got a penalty for a reason. And I'm surprised Fernando was in the mix there, because he usually avoids that kind of stuff. But it happened. It pretty much ruined his entire race. But Fernando is so chipper and philosophical nowadays that, hey, I'm just waiting for the next wonderful Fernando-ism.
Yes. But then, you know, I mean, Gasly got a 5-second penalty. Fine. And then Nando did the same to Mick Schumacher, and I was thinking maybe he thought he was fighting another Schumacher at Imola 2005. So Bottas leading with Max in tow, all on intermediate tires because of damp conditions. What were your expectations on the opening lap as to where will Lewis finish?
Well, it was very interesting. You could tell Lewis was struggling heavily. Not only that, but you could tell when Lewis is not content. I'm telling you guys, if you look at races and his 100 wins or whatever you want to do, and analyze his starts when he's not happy and his starts when he is happy, and you could put all the data in for any kind of happiness. I am not going to get into the small details, but this was an unhappy start, and it shows, and I love it. This guy is so manipulatively easy to kick around that he should watch what he says and everything. I think his manager should tell him to just shut the hell up. So I thought it was fascinating, but I'm telling you, the best start was really Verstappen and my old Finnish standby, Bottas. It was a phenomenal start from Bottas. So in control in the dampness. People are not giving him the credit he deserves. And when he goes to Alfa Romeo and he becomes teammates to Herta, that's really going to be exciting.
That's good. And, you know, you're right. It was a great start. And Max attack was MIA, which really, really surprised me. And that what got me thinking that maybe the Mercedes mojo is back. As we all know, Max is very quick and very slick when conditions are slippery. So total kudos to Bottas. While Mr. LCH was pumping fast lap, he was not sleeping, as you may think. But what was interesting that Lewis took about seven laps to pass Yuki Tsunoda to move into eighth. And of course, not surprisingly, Yuki said afterward, he wants to help Max win the championship. Which I was thinking, you know, why don't you help yourself and score some points like your teammate? And by laps 10, Mr. LCH was seventh after passing Lance and Bottas lead. You know, what was also very interesting, Max never even got into the DRS zone. And within 10 laps, Bottas had a lead that was over 2 seconds. And that was pretty much confirmation that Max may not be able to rattle Bottas's cage. Our man, Lewis, lap 25, he was in top 5 after passing Gasly, Pierre Gasly, and he was 17 seconds behind teammate, and of course, race leader, Mr. Bottas. What I did like, different people setting fastest lap, and this gave us some false hope, but at least got my hopes high. Lap 18, Max set the fastest lap as Sainz moved into 9th. Great drive from him. Lap 20, Bottas was 2.2 seconds ahead of Max as Wingman flies the fastest lap. Lap 24, Charles Leclerc set the fastest time in a Ferrari, which was very good. And then lap 33, I thought, okay, if this guy is correct, we may have a new race here. And that was when Carlos Sainz Jr. reports it's raining more. And at this time, Bottas' lead was over 4 seconds over Max. So, and that's when I said, uh-oh, Mercedes Mojo is back. And if it's really back and it's displayed in Austin and Lewis wins, then I think the party will be over for car number 33. But let's hope it keeps going ding-dong and seesaw the way it's going. But man, what I really liked was the tremendous dogfight between Lewis and Checo on lap 35. Very, very impressive driving by both. And I was asking myself, he's racing not just another guy, but Max's teammate, whether it's worth doing this. What was your take on that very impressive battle?
I was very impressed. I mean, let me put it this way. If Checo did something dumb and ended Lewis's race, he would be penalized, points on the super license, but it probably would have been worth it if you asked Dr. Marco. But the clean racing from Checo is awesome. I think Perez is awesome. I think Fernando believes Perez is awesome, and I think LCH thinks Perez is awesome. And you gotta admit, Perez is doing what he should be doing, and he could have been a little bit more severe being in a cutthroat team like Red Bull. I'm impressed. I think Perez has a certain elegance on track that's unmatchable, and I like his style.
Yeah, and you know, but the biggest risk you take in these damn conditions, I mean, with all good intention, you can, you know, slip. Your car can go a little wide, or, you know, the other guy can move a little bit to you, and then it's all over for both or one of them. So I was like, whoa, wait a minute here. Let's see what happens here. But it was very, very impressive. And kudos to both of them for not doing, dirty deeds. So that was good. Lap 37, Max in pitch for new set of intermediate tires. This put LCH in top 5. Bottas in next lap. And Seb came in and put on slicks, which was very, very surprising. That was too much of a risk. And soon after he got out, he reported it's not working. And that's when Charles Leclerc takes the lead. That was impressive. Did you think we may have a Ferrari win?
Honestly, I thought it was possible. Leclerc has pulled off a few good wins in his short tenure at Ferrari, but no, Mercedes was super strong. I think it was all just a momentarily quick blimp in time, and I was happy for Leclerc. And Ferrari is showing good progress, steady progress, without cheating, so good for them. But interesting, and for me, I still can't believe that starting from 11th place, LCH was having so much trouble in this Grand Prix driving a Mercedes.
Well, you know, you cannot have the team and the car and the driver always dialed in 100% of the time. So now and then you will have some issues. Now, this is where it was the big talk of the town. Lab 42, team wanted Lewis to box for a new set of enters, but LCH pulled a Nando on them. Do you think that was a good move by Lewis not to listen to the team?
Well, you know how those heads get really big and they can't get in the car anymore? Listen, LCH is a 7-time world champion. When he talks, people listen, even if it's gibberish. I don't know. He should have pitted when the team wanted to pit him, but no. He was stubborn. He was Sonoda-ish. And, hey, guess what? No, you're not even on the podium now.
Yeah, but, you know, in the past, he has denied team orders and team instructions and gone on to do wonderful things. So, obviously, when you try to do something, it works out, you look like a hero. Otherwise, you look like a Lando Norris, and these things happen. Lap 45, Leclerc leading without stopping. Bottas behind, Max third, and LCH only 3 seconds behind in fourth. And that was looking very, very good. Lap 47 of 58, Bottas sails by Leclerc to retake the lead, and that was the end of the Tifosi's hopes and dreams for a victory. Lap 48, Leclerc in for a new set of enters, comes out behind LCH. Finally, lap 51, LCH in pits, comes out fifth behind Perez, and his team had told him that no matter what you do, stay out or stay in, you're not getting on the podium. They must have done their, you know, what you call Chinese abacus calculation. So, you know, easy to say now, he should have listened to them. Going into these final few races, going out on a limb on your own can be very, very costly. So, finally, we have, after lap 58, Bottas winning his first Grand Prix since Sochi last year. And this is apart from his sprint race victory this year. He called the race one of his best wins, saying it felt like a relief. He also set the fastest lap and get the extra point. The win is number 10 for the Finnish driver from a town called Nestola. Last year in Turkey, he had a Massa moment, spinning 5 times and finishing outside the points, which is never good when you are driving a Mercedes. Max's second successive podium finish gives the championship lead back to him from Lewis, this time by 6 points. Same number of races to go, and fans are getting excited. 12 podiums with 7 wins from 16 races is a pretty good effort for possible regime change, but still no guarantee. And like you said, according to Max, his life will not change if he does not win the championship. But I think, you know, it's going to be... We will have a total reset next year. If he does not win this year, I won't be surprised that... I fully expect Mercedes to have a competitive car, but I won't be surprised if somebody else like a Mercedes or a McLaren also take a giant leap for mankind and Prancing Horse and get into the mix, and then we have 3 or 4 drivers duking out for the championship. So we'll see how it goes. You know, there is a school of thought that says Max will never win a world championship because of his aggressive style. Do you subscribe to that theory?
No, because times have changed so much. But the biggest problem is how hard Max is on the car itself. Forget everything else. A driver sometimes can never get to grips with becoming one with the car and is always fighting the drivability of the car. That is a very important thing. But we'll see what happens. It is a tough world out there, And when Max loses this championship, he's going to realize that, number one, it doesn't reflect on your drivability and your and the respect from fans, because there are great drivers that have gone on to win zero championships, but they have won the accolades and love of their familia. So in the end, Max is going to be a great driver no matter what happens.
Very true, you know, and like I've always said and still say, and will continue to say, many racing fans will long remember Stirling Moss, who never won a championship, and Gilles Villeneuve, who never won a championship, than drivers who did win a championship. So, yeah, people who follow with a lot of passion and interest for many years, they do know the score. So, moving on, Sergio Perez, first podium since Paul Ricard 9 races ago. He was also on the podium last year here in Istanbul. When he was defending against LCH, it reminded me of him when he was teammate to Jenson Button. If you recall, JB was not too thrilled with some of his defensive and aggressive antics. I remember one of the races, JB radioed to the team, "What is he doing?" And he once said that about Lewis also as a teammate. Okay, then we have in fourth place Charles Leclerc. After taking pole in Monaco and Baku, he started third and gave the Tifosi some smell of success by leading the race in the closing stages. But it was not to be, as he was forced to get new tires, which dropped him to fourth at the checkered flag, same position as his last visit to Istanbul. Lewis, to pit or not to pit was the big question for car number 44. It's easy to say after the race he should have listened to his team, but on a positive side at least, he did not say shut up to people who worked very hard to make him win races and championships. I know there's a lot of radio talk that's available. I did hear him use the F word, but I did not hear him say shut up. His up-close and personal dicing with Max's teammate was very ballsy. A DNF for Lewis or Max with only 6 races remaining will pretty much hand over the title to the other guy, or as they say on TV, another network. Given the pace of number two, I think, tell me if you agree with me, I think LCH would have checked out without the 10th place grid penalty. What say you?
I don't know. That's a tough call. You know, I'm not a crystal ball reader, but I still think that this is a LCH race that LCH in the beginning thought he could win, because he won last year from 6th. 11th is not a big difference. And he's still in the best package on the grid. I think it's a big disappointment. He's going to still put mentally, I think the front cerebellum is going to tell him, hey, it's not your fault, dude. It's those clowns at the office. So don't worry about it. Stay strong. Stay focused. But I still think that Mercedes is going to win this. They're ahead in the Constructors' Championship. Lewis Hamilton is going to some tracks that he dominates at. And I'm afraid that Max knows that Red Bull, they're beginning, he sees the beginning of running out of steam. And Mercedes has just got so much more steam left inside the boiler. So everybody's going to be a realist pretty soon. We shall see if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, that would be great.
Okay, sir, moving on. Lando, Pierre Gasly, the Alpha Tauri ace of Faenza base for 6th, Lando Norris for 7th for McLaren, his race-winning teammate Danny Rick finishing outside the points. Carlos Sainz Jr., now this hombre is really impressing me a lot this season. A lot of people think his teammate Leclerc is in the same league as Max, but Sainz Jr. softly has been moving up the totem pole in Maranello. He started from the back of the grid and got into the points to finish 8th. This was his 9th consecutive points finish this season. He is now half a point ahead of his teammate in the championship. A world championship was lost by that small margin in 1984. Niki Lauda celebrating his 3rd and final championship against his McLaren teammate, Le Professeur Prost. I'm sure you remember that race. I remember that race very well. It took place in Portugal. Lance Stroll was 9th in his papa's Aston Martin, who owns the team and the car company. Very nice. And your man, Esteban Ocon picked up the final point by finishing 10th. Now, interestingly, he was the only driver who went on one set of tires. And I was listening to Ted Kravitz's notebook, which he does after every race and which I enjoy very much and is available on YouTube. He said this was the first time a driver went nonstop in a race since Monaco 1996. So pretty good drive for him. And I love the color on this Alpine, by the way.
Bravo.
Did you agree with the Carlos Sainz Jr. being voted driver of the day?
Absolutely. I think he's the greatest driver since Juan Manuel Fangio. He's very steady. He's very legit. He gives good feedback. This guy is a very well-rounded package. He's like the Peyton Manning of Formula One.
Good, good. Would you call Lewis Hamilton a Tim Tebow of Formula One?
No, because Lewis Hamilton is not writing scripture on his face.
No, but he was smart enough to show his cross to the crowd in Abu Dhabi. Not that I have a problem with that, but it just goes to show his social awareness.
I understand, and I'm sure Tim and Lewis have hugged many, many times.
You know, some years ago when the gas prices were very high?
Yes.
Then there was a joke on TV that Tim Tebow went down on both knees when he went to fill up his SUV and saw the gas prices.
That's beautiful. So you've heard the young man who hosts The Tonight Show sing the Team Tebow song?
No, I've not heard that one.
Oh, it's very good. It's very, very good. You should Google it. It's on YouTube in the morning and in the evening.
Well, you can play it as a musical mondial.
That's a very intelligent thing to say and suggest.
Yeah. I'm a listener of F1 Weekly also, so I'll get to listen to it.
I like that. You're not only the CEO, but you're also a client.
Yes, exactly. Okay, sir, this race, apart from the 2021 thrilling and suspenseful Belgian Grand Prix, this race was the 11th in the glorious history of Grand Prix Championship where every car finished the race. Now, your man Machismo, I have to say this to you, Nando was singing the F1 Weekly host song saying, "Luck is not with us this season." Oh dear, the question is, where did it go after December 31st, 2006? Inquiring minds and curious cat from Karachi would like to know, Mr. Rogers.
Well, that's a good point, Nass. And on that particular note, we're going to take a quick break. And we'll be back with some Perrier after these brief messages.
This is podcast number 93, September 23rd, 2006. Steve?
This F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Speed Gear, authentic racewear. Speed Gear has the best selection from the top teams and drivers in Formula One. Hats, shirts, sunglasses, diecast, and much more. Look to Speed Gear for your favorite team and driver apparel and collectibles. Speed Gear, authentic racewear. Just click on the icon on our homepage. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steven, and thank you, Speed Gear. Keep up the good work, gentlemen. Wow. A pretty dull week in terms of news. Obviously, some of the new guys, Hamilton, Piquet Jr., out there testing their team's cars, all pumped up because it's their first time in Formula One cars, and I could imagine how exhilarating that could be. And this next interview I find fascinating because this gentleman has had a fantastic career, but it's pot-marked by interesting moments and decisions, and obviously I'm talking about Jos the Boss Verstappen.
Yes, Jos de Bos, as he's called in his native Holland, was born in March 1972 and had a very impressive and fast climb to Formula One racing. Like Jarno Trulli in Formula One today, he participated in less than 50 car races before arriving in Grand Prix racing, which I think is very, you know, too quick, too fast, too soon. But then again, on the other hand, Kimi Raikkonen made it to Formula One with less than 25 races.
So if you've got the gift, some people can do that big leap, but it's not advised.
No, you need to have some experience. And, you know, I think what really screwed up Jos Verstappen, I think he's a pretty fabulous race car driver, is that he just arrived in a big league way too soon. But that's just my opinion. Anyway, Verstappen started in karting at the age of 8 and was junior Dutch champion at the age of 12. Later in his karting career, he won 2 European titles. In 1993, he won the famous Marlboro Masters at Zandvoort, the Dutch track, and the German Formula 3 Championship. He made his Formula 1 debut in 1994 at the Brazilian Grand Prix. His final Formula 1 race was the 2003 Japanese Grand Prix. In all, he took part in 107 Grand Prix races and was on the podium on 2 occasions, back-to-back races in Hungary and Spa in 1994.
Now, 1994, I find a very interesting year to come into Formula 1. He was there when they had the famous fire at the Benetton pits.
German Grand Prix.
Grand Prix. And he was teammate to Michael Schumacher.
That's the last thing you want when you're a young driver.
Some people call it the kiss of death.
Absolutely, it is.
I mean,
lap of death.
Exactly. And so a lot of people say that could have been the beginning of the end.
There's no question about it. You know, the last thing you want, especially when you have not established yourself, you're young, and you're a teammate to anybody like Michael Schumacher, Ayrton Senna, or as Felipe Massa will find out next year, Kimi Raikkonen, you're pretty much done. Because you get exposed that you cannot run with the top dog. And once that stigma or is established, then no top team. And as you know, in Formula One or in any series, there are only 2 or 3 teams that can get you a championship. And even these teams go through ups and downs. Look at Williams and McLaren. So if you're not in the right team at the right time, it's very hard. And if you have a teammate that's Schumacher or Senna or Raikkonen, you know, have a nice day.
I agree with you completely.
And he drove for many teams. He drove for Benetton, Simtek, Footwork, Tyrrell, Stewart, Arrows, and Minardi. But he's now making a pretty good name for himself as the lead driver for Team Holland in the A1 GP series. And we saw him race at Laguna Seca also. Actually, he had a very bad day. I think
he had a terrible day.
Yeah.
He was getting out of the car completely frustrated. And that was Jos at his worst.
Yeah, he was really pissed off. And I remember him walking out of the pit lane because he was given a penalty. So he stopped his car. And the team principal for Team Holland is another ex-Formula 1 driver, Jan Lammers. Pretty nice guy. And I remember watching Lammers trying to talk to him. And Jos just blew him by. But, you know, we all have our bad hair day. So this interview is my conversation with him. I ran into him at the European Karting Championship in Marienburg, Belgium, on September 3rd. Enjoy.
I'm here with Jos Verstappen. Jos, you were in go-kart racing. What brings you here today?
Watching the people driving.
Is anybody driving for you?
No. I don't have a team anymore. I work with my son and a friend of mine.
Okay.
And we're just interesting, of course, in go-karts and to see the people again who we worked with in the past, and just keep the, you know, the information, see what's happening.
And if I'm not mistaken, you went from go-kart racing to Formula One.
Yeah, in 2.5 years' time. Yeah.
I remember your days in Formula One. Quick question: what is your favorite track in Formula One circuit?
Spa.
Absolutely.
A little bit further up here. So
yeah.
Spa is a very nice track, and. It's just everything in it, and that makes it so special.
I have a question for you. You know, last year and this year also, Montoya had a habit of running into people, or even when he was ahead of people, he would run into Montoya.
Yes.
And then you had an incident with him in Interlagos, right? Can you tell me what happened there?
Well, obviously, I drove in the back of him, and so you can't blame him for that. That was something very strange, but I think that was not his fault. But I think at the end of his time in Formula One, he was very frustrated. And I think when you don't have the support of the team, I think you get very frustrated. And I think he made a good choice for himself to go to NASCAR. You know, it's more friendly, and Formula One is not such a nice place if you not have the team behind you.
What was your most memorable moment in Formula One?
I had a few ups and downs, but I think my third position in Hungary was good, especially after the fire we had in 2 weeks before that. So that was one of the best memories I had.
And the A1 season start in Zandvoort in October. You're the lead driver, I believe.
Yep. Yeah, we're going to do it another year, so I'm happy with that. No, I'm looking forward. I mean, we did a two-day test last week, and I think we are close to the front, and that makes it very exciting again.
What made Team France so dominant last year?
They had a very good engineer, and obviously the engineer left to Germany, and no, Germany was quicker. So, that makes it a good challenge. And I think the times will be closer now than it was last year. So more exciting moments on television.
So you think that we'll be in for a Dutch treat this year?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Any message for F1 Weekly listeners? We do a podcast in America.
Well, come and watch America race again this year. And I think A1, it's a nice series and very interesting to watch and absolutely a lot of action.
Thank you very much. Okay. Appreciate your time.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondiale and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir, and dropping of a race from the schedule is never a good news, but there are reports that Chinese Grand Prix may be chop-chop from the 2022 calendar, victim of their own medicine, coronavirus. And, I know it's a very large country, most populous country, and it's good to have a Formula One race there, but you know what, that Shanghai track with empty stands, even in non-corona time, that doesn't float my boat on the Yellow River. Do you like that track?
No, I detest the track, but I like their enthusiasm and excitement, even though I can't really see through the industrial layer of smog.
Thank you very much. Okay, now, this was strange. The Formula One doctor Ian Roberts and medical car driver Alan van der Merwe, they tested positive 19 before the Turkish Grand Prix and did not go there. So that was a kind of surprise. You know, it's interesting, even people who are living in a bubble, traveling first class, private jets, even living in White House sometimes, they are getting this virus. So I just hope this damn thing goes away and we can go back to normal life next season. Okay, Red Bull turning Japanese. This was very interesting. We did not even talk about this. Both the Red Bull team ran special Honda F1 colors in Istanbul as arigato and sayonara for engine supplier, especially for upgrading the GP2 engine to race and possibly championship-winning F1 engine. Time will tell. Honda's halcyon days were in the late 80s and early 90s with Williams and then Honda. Senna winning all his three championships with Honda. Interestingly, Mr. Rogers, Honda's first F1 win was with their own car in 1965 in Mexico City, and it was a triple whammy. Not a double, but a triple. It was their first win. It was the first win for the driver from Southern California, Richie Ginther, and first win for a tire company from Akron, Ohio, Goodyear. So that's a very, very interesting race there. Now, sir, we come to the main talking point as far as U.S. involvement is concerned. It's very impressive how much American involvement is in Formula One now. Actually has been, people just don't realize it. But very high profile is coming in more and more. We're going to have a race in Miami, which I'm loving it. And now we have very strong rumors that Michael Andretti has taken over 80% of the Swiss-based Formula One team currently known as Alfa Romeo, but we know them as Sauber. And that is the claim of very famous and dependable, credible Swiss journalist Roger Benoit. He reported in Blick newspaper, and this was the widespread rumor in the paddock also. Team boss Frederick Vasseur, who used to run the GP2 team, ART GP2 team with which Lewis won the championship. He is the main guy at Sauber Motorsports. He is not ready to confirm the news. And this is what he said, and I quote, "If all the reports I've read in the last few weeks were true, we've had sold the team 25 times already." End of quote. Now, this is reported from racefans.net. Now, the main writer is Dieter Rankin, who is originally from South Africa, lives now in Belgium. I've met him a few times. A nice guy, very knowledgeable, and he does come up with real scoop. You know, if you ever watch him in the press conferences, he does surprise a lot of people with what he knows. Okay, he is saying that the 80% of the shares in Islero Investment at a price of 350 million euros will put Michael in control of the Sauber Motorsports and Sauber Engineering Division. And sir, you know, I ran into Mario Andretti at the Atlanta airport earlier this year, and we had a long conversation, and obviously it was a private conversation, so I was not going to record or, you know, say things. But I did ask him about Michael trying to buy a Formula One team, and he said very seriously he's looking into it, and, you know, he did not get into details. But he did say to me, I asked him if he was involved in this. He says, no, I have no interest in team ownership. And he said to me some, after he retired, some very high profile names involved in racing had called him to, you know, become a team owner. And he says, apart from racing, driving cars, I have no interest. So, you know, again, to each his own. Okay, sir, do we have some more time? We can do a little Times of Turkish Grand Prix.
I think that would be good, Nasser.
Okay, sir. The inaugural Grand Prix in Istanbul in 2005 was won from pole position by Kimi Raikkonen in his McLaren, led from start to finish. El Machismo was second in a Renault and would go on to win the championship at the end of the season. Now, this is interesting. Fastest lap was recorded by our favorite percolated Colombian, Monty. He was on his way to second behind teammate Kimi, but played last tango in Istanbul with the Jordan of Tiago Monteiro with few laps remaining. Monteiro later claimed Monteiro cut right in front of him after passing him. True or false, I don't know. I have to say, Monty never found a cucumber on the road, but he did find a jet dryer at Daytona. Then we have Felipe Massa, who scored his first Grand Prix win here in 2006 for Ferrari, and then went three in a row, winning again in 2007 and 8. In 2009, JB won the race in his double diffuser Braun GP on his way to championship success. This turned out to be his last win of the season, as others caught up on the double diffuser trick. Oh man, in 2010, somebody got very lucky and won the race. Can you guess who that was?
Huh, let me guess. El Macho to the other side.
Yes. Muy macho hombre de Stephen H., Lewis Hamilton. It was during this race that Red Bull teammates Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel collided. And in the whole big world, only two people apart from Sebastian thought it was Webber's wobbly, which was absolutely amazing. Such was their love and devotion for Bastian, which is now bestowed upon their young Dutch master. Okay, let's see what we have here. And, sir, this is interesting. Bottas's pole on Sunday was his 18th, which makes him the driver with most pole position without becoming world champion. And a similar record is held by Max Verstappen. He is the driver with the most Grand Prix wins without a title. And, sir, I think you will agree with me on this at least. This track design is definitely the very best of Hermann the German Tilke. What say you?
It is. This is his crowning achievement, because a lot of the tracks that he's touched are stinky and smelly. So good for him. I guess, you know, eventually you got to nail it and kick it out of the ballpark, just like the Giants do with the Dodgers. So.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Fobb.
Gracias. I'm just following tradition as we are in postseason.
Well, Mr. Rogers, it's been a wonderful season so far. We would like to see both of them on the podium in every race, and may the best man win the championship.
And on that note, keep up the good work, Nas. Another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. I think everybody is wonderful out there. I want to thank everybody who contributes. I want to thank everybody who listens. Please email us anytime you want. It's simple. It's always Clark@F1Weekly.com. Nas, I want to thank you, and my musical mondial is going to be Max Verstappen buying 2 tickets to paradise. Take it away. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.